a save here on my computer.
Okay.
Talking to you.
Computers are totally alien as far as I'm concerned. I need one badly, everybody tells me, but I cannot summon the courage to face one.
I was the same way 4 years ago. And so I went to the junior college and took a course. And that broke the ice, and I don't know how I'd get along without it.
That's what they tell me. I went up to a high school. They had an evening course in word processor, really. It wasn't much. But they had, yeah, I don't mean to sound this way, but they had this bunch of old women in there with an average IQ of 12. And, I got nothing out of it. It was the most frustrating experience I ever had. It's 8 weeks of babysitting a bunch of old ladies.
How do you write without a word processor?
This is what everybody asks me. I write everything out longhand first and then type it from that, and they tell me I'm crazy.
Well, maybe that works for you because you're able to look at it at a slower pace than if you were running it in.
It does work, but they keep telling me I'll save vast amounts of time, and they tell me the storage would be so much better putting things on disk than I've got three file drawers full of various and sundry manuscripts that everybody looks at it and says, gee whiz, you could have that in one little shoebox.
Yeah. Do you, are you a full-time writer or a full-time vet?
I'm a horse vet, and right now the horse industry is so horrible, I'm not even sure some days I'm doing that anymore.
Uh-huh.
I guess I'm a full-time vet, but I've been writing more and more the last few years.
What do you write, basically?
Mostly baseball.
Really?
I've got one book published, one book coming out in the spring, and just signed an agreement for another book that probably won't be out the following spring, because that's when baseball books come out.
Yeah.
And I'm working on one on the bonus baby era, which is being real tough, because most of the bonus babies don't want to talk about it.
Really?
Yeah. Well, there's about 60 of them. I've gotten responses from about 20 that have been real nice, real helpful. But I've written all I can find addresses for, I guess, all but three or four of them. And then there's a couple that passed away. And I either get back no or no thank you or no response at all. I guess no response is just that.
You obviously have the mailing list from the guy in Iowa.
Is that where the guy is? The book with the address list? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he has an updated list, you know, that he gets every once in a while that he'll sell you.
Oh, is it? Does he?
Yeah, and it's reasonable. Not even, you know, even before the new book comes out.
Well, the books come out, every 2 or 3 years, I think.
Yeah, but he updates all the time, and, he jacked something. I don't have my... Jack Smalling.
Smalling, right, yeah.
Yeah, and I've talked to him a couple times, and he's got those lists updated, you know, in case it's of any importance to you.
Well, it is, because I just got back one today. Eddie O'Brien has moved, and no forwarding address on record, so maybe I'll contact him. I've gotten two others like that.
What he does is that, if you furnish him information that, like you have there, the ones that you got back, then he will, give you a break on the price when he sells you the list.
Oh, okay, well, that's good to know.
Yeah, so you might want to give him a call.
Yeah, I will definitely do that.
So
thank
go
you.
Ahead.
Okay, well, I'll ask you first, let me say I appreciate this. I know you're probably a very busy man, and this is probably taking a chunk out of something. I appreciate it. I'll ask you maybe a dozen questions, and if you would, please just answer as short or as long as you want to. And if you don't want to answer something, just don't answer.
Okay.
You went to Ohio University.
Right.
You signed after graduation?
Yes.
Okay, Washington, right?
Washington Senators, yeah.
Okay, now you did grad...
was the expansion Senators.
Right, the new Senators, yeah.
Right.
You did graduate work. Was that in the off-season?
Yes.
Okay, Indiana?
Yeah, I got my MBA from Indiana, and I did some other work at University of Maryland.
Okay, and this was all done a semester at a time in the winters?
Right.
Okay. Where did you go? I've got your record here. find you?
I went to Wisconsin Rapids, right. Wisconsin, okay. In the Midwest League.
Okay. You hit pretty well first couple of years, but you progressed on your defense. Is that safe to say?
Yeah. Basically, I was really good defensive player, and in the minor leagues, I hit well. For a catcher.
Yeah, you had some 280s, 270s, things like that.
280, 270, 290 years.
You came to Washington actually pretty quickly. What, was your second year?
65, which would have been my third year.
Third year?
Yeah, at the end of the season, I started 65 in York, Pennsylvania, in the Eastern League. And I went up to Hawaii, in August sometime, I think. And then was called up to big club at the end of the year.
And you actually hit
when
the ball.
Rosters expand.
You hit pretty doggone well that last month.
Yeah, it was all downhill from there.
If you don't start good, you may not have any downhill to go though.
That's right. But yes, I did.
Word was, and this is what I remember from back in those days, you and I are the same age, so I can, most everything you talk about is at least in my mind, I can remember most of it. The word was the Washington Senators pitchers, for the most part, preferred you to Paul Casanova.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. That's a fair statement.
Yeah. I guess Casanova, never did. With the potential he had or showed, they thought he was going to be something. He never did do it.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, that's true. I mean, he had one of the best arms I've ever seen as far as strength, throwing strength. And, of course, I was a good thrower, too. I had a good strong arm, but I wasn't as strong as his, but I could get rid of it. And I had an outstanding record as far as, throwing out runners and so forth.
They didn't keep those statistics as much as they do now, but I remember somewhere along the line you had caught like 60 or 65% of the runners at one point.
Well, some guy, I don't even know if I have it anymore. I got it somewhere. Let's see if I can find it. Wrote an article in one of these baseball, here, I think, can't even remember. Oh, the National Pastime. Are you aware of that?
Sure, yeah, I get that.
At some point here, a guy named Merritt Clifton wrote a pretty good-sized article on me called Pardon My French. And that's more like a statistical thing, and he went through all of that, pointing out how great I was.
That's good to hear.
So I don't even know when it was done, but it's been 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah, I probably even read it, just don't remember it. I'll dig it up.
Yeah. So, but there's some pretty good information on on-base percentage and number of runners thrown out and so forth in that.
Okay, on your on-base percentage, why was your batting eye so good?
Geez, I really don't know. My eyesight was never good. When I played, I started wearing contacts early, and I could never get my eyesight adjusted to. I could read the charts 20/20, but it isn't the same. For example, some of the really good hitters, and even the hitters that can hit 290, 280 in there. They saw the ball a lot better than I did. And Williams and those kind of guys, they could actually pick up the spin on the baseball.
That's amazing.
And I could never do that. I mean, I literally could never do that. And I'm not too tall. I'm 5'7". And there's a couple things. I cultivated trying to get good pitches to hit because I wasn't, I couldn't handle the pitches that were, just out of the strike zone. That's basically, cultivated it as a minor leaguer, get a pitch I could hit.
In rudimentary research, which I'm going to try to dig out a little bit more, but you are, I believe, the only player with over 500 at-bats in your career who had more walks than base hits.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I've looked. I can't find anybody else. I've looked at some really oddball ones, too. You may be the only one with more than 100 at-bats that comes into that, but I don't want to dig down quite that low because that's going to take a lot of work. But
yeah. Part of it, too, you got to remember I hit eighth. And so
yeah.
I got more intentional walks than I would have gotten hitting seventh, being the same hitter that I was.
Well, an awful lot of guys have batted eighth. You know, there's been somebody batting eighth in every game it's ever played, and they still don't have that kind of statistic.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I mean, that's part of it, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it contributes, certainly. Leg injury in 1966. What happened?
In what?
1966, you had a leg injury.
Oh, yeah, I had a torn cartilage in my right knee.
Okay, that cost you
a season. Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Did it come back all right?
Yeah, you know, it healed, and of course my knees are kind of bummy now, but at that time it did. As I recall, I don't know whether it was 66 or 67, you probably know, but I stayed active on the roster even after my leg, even after I had the injury. I don't know whether it's because the Senators didn't want to bring somebody up and put me on the disabled list or what, but I just basically stayed active and backed up Casanova, even though I really couldn't play.
I think that was 66. I think they kept you until just about call-up time at the end of the year, and they finally disabled you at that point.
Yeah, okay. Well, that was the year then.
Okay. Is there a game that stands out in your memory, either that you did something in or that you participated in that was the best game or perhaps biggest thrill, something like that?
Well, like I said, from my first day it went downhill. My first game was against the Angels, and offensively I went 2 for 2, drove in a run. First time up I was intentionally walked, my first time in the majors, and Dean Chance was the pitcher. And I remember I got my first base hit center field, and when I drove in a run, and of course we won the ball game, and I guess I was so hyper. Jose Cardinal was the center fielder for the Angels, and he kind of deked me. He sort of just kind of came in real slow into get the ball, and so I hauled ass for second base, and he threw me out by about 10 feet. And I saw him at an old-timers game, oh, I don't know, 3 years ago up at Cooperstown. And I talked to him about it, and he remembered it, too.
He was a good fielder.
Huh?
He was a good fielder. I'm sure he caught more than one.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we didn't, the Senators in those years didn't play in too many real crucial games, so you know, I mean, that's one that really sticks out in my mind.
Yeah, well, it would have to. The Senators never were a great threat at that point. I have a note here on the side of my notes about your throwing. When you figure assists to plate appearances, assists from you throwing, and this plate appearances by you, which is a rough indication of innings played. Your assists projected to the same plate appearances, and this is getting kind of far off statistically, but the same plate appearances as the other catchers in the major leagues at that time were vastly higher. The guy would be leading the league with 70 assists. You would have 40 in one-third of the plate appearances. So, you know, maybe your arm was as strong as Casanova's, but you sure knew what to do with it when you let go of it.
Yeah, I was very good at that. I mean, I could throw out just about anybody because I could get rid of the ball very quickly. Plus, you know, I played the guessing game with the runners, and many times I was able to call pitch outs, which, you know, obviously increases your ability. And I had a signal with some of my pitchers that if I thought there was a chance that the guy was going to go at first, that they quick pitched as much as they could.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they'd come down and, you know, even the guys that were slow on the mound, in effect, they were giving up, not throwing the pitch out, but they were, you know, making a quick pitch. some guys are notoriously slow.
Oh, yes.
And I sort of worked with them that, you know, hey, you don't have to quicken it up all the time so that you don't think you're throwing the ball the way you should. That, you know, if I can throw this guy out, you know, it's a great help to you. So if I give you the sign every once in a while, you know, come down and go quick, bang, bang. And, of course, all pitchers are taught that, but once they get to throwing and into the mound, maybe only the top 10 or 15% remember it.
And even some of those, the stride is so slow or so long that even to hurry it up, they're not going to accomplish much.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's, I don't even know if anybody does it anymore, but it sure worked for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a whole lot of things being done in baseball now that weren't done, or not being done now that was done back when you were playing.
Right.
The game is kind of going the wrong way. Talking about the pitchers, who was the best pitcher you caught or the best pitcher you saw, either way?
Probably the best pitcher that I caught, well, it was a toss-up between Dick Bosman and Joe Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
The best pitcher, the toughest for me to hit, was Mel Stottlemyre, because he just, you know, his control was so good. Sam McDowell, I mean, was almost unhittable, literally unhittable,
mm-hmm.
even though I didn't play against left-handers very much. But, I mean, he could throw so good and so hard that it was, you know, it was no contest when he was on.
Stottlemyre was a great pitcher. McDowell was, I guess, a case in wasted talent, but yeah, he was awfully good when he was at his peak.
He had great stuff. I mean, he had great stuff. There wasn't any question about it.
Who was the best player you saw?
Frank Robinson.
That's a good answer.
No question. He was the best good pitch hitter I ever saw. In other words, a pitch that was very difficult to hit. The pitcher's pitch, he hit more pitcher's pitches hard than anybody I ever saw.
Mm-hmm.
He played the game hard. If he was the type of guy that you hated when you played against him, but boy, you'd like love to have him.
Mm-hmm. When you left the majors, did you continue to play ball or did you hang out?
No. It was in 71, and I immediately went into the business world.
Have you been doing the same thing ever since, or have you changed?
No, not really. At that time, I went to work for a computer sciences corporation in their off-track betting and systems division because I'd been working with them on a part-time basis before that. And then I became a broker with Merrill Lynch. Moved back to Ohio to my home. And since then, I've been an option trader, stock option trader on the CBOE and on the Pacific Coast, and now basically I'm spending full time developing property in Baja, Mexico.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
That's got to be interesting.
Oh, it's interesting, and you know, Mexico has always had a connotation, economic connotation of danger, and basically they're running their country better now than we are running ours.
Well, that's not hard to imagine.
But I guess not. I guess not, but they've really made a dramatic social and economic turnaround in the last 3 to 4 years.
What's going on in Baja? I've been down there, but it's been almost 20 years ago, and there was nothing there.
Well, you know, 20 years ago, you're talking 71, and at that point, the road really wasn't completed all the way to the tip.
That's
I
right.
Think.
Yeah, it was.
It was 72 before MEX 1 got completed all the way to the tip.
Yeah, I'm only talking probably 68 or so, somewhere in there.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well, Mexico 1 is completed all the way to the end. There's been a tremendous amount of development. We're down near Cabo San Lucas on the Sierra Cortez side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably one of the hottest real estate vacation spots, that tip of Baja, in the world right now. I mean, in the world, there's not too much. It's really, really hot, but that's become an extremely attractive area from an investment viewpoint and from a destination vacation viewpoint for the United States.
Hotels and condominiums, things like that?
Yeah, hotels, condominiums, golf courses. You know, Baja is a desert, so
right.
one of the problems, of course, is water. But with the new technology and desal plants and so forth, the water becomes cheaper and cheaper relative to not having any at all. And the Mexican government is much more progressive about wanting to attract foreign capital than they were 6, 8, 10 years ago. So it has a combination of the fact that Baja was very, and still is, very sparsely populated.
Right.
So it really hasn't been ruined. You know, so
mm-hmm.
if somebody goes in and tries to do it right, why it tends to come out much better than to go into Mexico City or some of the other places on the mainland of Mexico where, you know, for 200 years, you know, they've done things wrong.
Yeah.
Development viewpoint.
Right, I understand.
So, you know, and of course, I love to fish and catch a lot of fish, and it's probably, maybe one of the top 10 fishing spots in the world.
No kidding. I've got a friend in Jamaica. He's in the horse business, and fortunately, he's a good friend. He takes me down there frequently to consult on the farms and racetrack in Jamaica. And he, fishing, deep sea fishing especially, is a passion with him. And we go out occasionally down there. I have no desire to fish, but I like going out with him. He's fished in several places. I don't know if he's ever gone there. I'll tell him.
Yeah, tell him about it, because the fishing there is, you know, it's excellent. Big game fish and small fish. It really has not been overfished from a sports fishing viewpoint. 4 or 5 years ago, they stopped the Japanese from using commercial fishing for the marlin.
Good.
Which has helped us. It hasn't come back to like it was 20 years ago, but I guess no place is like it was 20 years ago.
Well, that's safe to say. I'll tell him. He goes out on these they'll have 3 and 4 day tournaments down there in Jamaica.
Right.
And I guess it's for tourists primarily, but still a Jamaican, he enjoys it and
right.
Can afford to do it. I will tell him. Maybe,
okay.
Maybe he'll show up down there. The racehorse, how'd you get your name?
Well, you know, Jim French was owned by John Galbraith.
Right.
And John Galbraith, it's quite a long story, and I don't really, my answer is I don't really know, but I've been told a couple different things. When I went, John Galbraith was a graduate of Ohio University. And a friend of his who went to school with John Galbraith was a family friend of ours, and that's basically how I went to Ohio University and got a scholarship that Galbraith sponsored. And I had met John a couple times at when he was the owner of the Pirates. And as a result, I went to Ohio University and had no contact with John Galbraith for years and years. And then the racehorse was named, and I was told that it was named after me because of all of that relationship. I also heard that it was named after a groom whose name was Jim French. But I'd never heard from John to determine if that's really the way it was done or not.
Well, naming a horse after a person, the jockey club requires the permission of the person if it's a real person.
Okay. Well, then they did not. I was not contacted by the jockey club.
Okay. Well, I guess that can be gotten around to, especially a man with Galbraith standing in the horse industry.
Yeah. I mean, it seems kind of ironic, doesn't it?
What's that?
Yeah, I mean it seems to be more than a coincidence.
Oh yes, indeed. Yes.
But I was told at one time that it was named after a groom.
Well, I'll ask around here. Somebody ought to know. The horse went to France. I think he ended up standing in Japan.
Oh, did he?
I believe so. He was, stood in France for many years. In fact, my Jamaican friend had a mare by Jim French that I used to board here for him. And he was a useful stallion in France, not tops, but he was evidently a real good stallion when he ended up in Japan.
Huh.
Japanese racing is used to be a little bit lower than other places, and he evidently that's where he needed to be.
Yeah.
Did you save souvenirs from your career?
Oh, I have a few.
Like what'd you keep?
Well, I mean, I have some baseballs that, you know, like my first major league home run. I've got a ball signed by Nixon. You know, the first ball that he threw out for a game. I don't even remember what year. You know, some old bats and obviously pictures.
Mm-hmm. Do you hear from fans? Did I get fan mail?
All the time. All the time. Basically, I don't know whether they're fans or whether they're... it's mostly card people want their cards or autographs. So whether they're really fans or whether it's a commercial operation, you know, I suppose it's probably 50-50.
One fellow told me, he says he'll get 10 or 12 a week, and he thinks most of them are probably from people flipping through the book and they see a name and they say, let's see if this guy will sign.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sure that's the case. But also, you know, I get handwritten letters from people, so I think they're genuine because, you know, the value of my signature is not worth the time of some guy sitting down writing a handwritten letter.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, those guys, I tend to honor their requests more than somebody that sends me a form letter.
Yeah, well, I can understand that. And there are baseball fans. I'm sure there's a whole lot of folks around.
But I don't get 10 to 12 a week. I might get 6 to 8 a month.
Okay. Well, it depends on the time you played, the profile, when you played, things like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, Joe DiMaggio is going to get more than you.
Right.
Would you go back and do this again, be a ball player?
Oh, yeah.
Any regrets from your career?
No. The only regrets that I had is, I guess, the regret of everybody that... is 50 years old and looks back on what they did when they were in their 20s. I would work on my hitting much, much more, and I would have worked on my conditioning much, much more. Not that I was out of shape, but I know more about exercise and physiology and eating today than I knew nothing back then. Of course, no one, you know, the ball teams really didn't follow it. And I would, I'd worked on my hitting a lot more. I'd have changed from trying, I would have become more of a Nelly Fox hitter and worked on it. And would have done my conditioning much, much more strenuously than I did at the time.
It's very easy to look back on it and say that. I've got a son who's a pitcher in college right now, and I'm trying to tell him exactly what you just said. And, heck, he's 19. Well, he's on the verge of being 20, and he's fit. He could be fitter. He doesn't work at it. And I keep telling him, say, one of these days you're going to be working a 9-to-5 job and wish you had been a little bit more fit back when you had a chance.
Right.
And I don't, you know, even if you'd have known it, it's kind of hard maybe thinking that you'd have done it.
Well, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, that's very true. Who knows? But like I say, you know, 50 years looking back, I mean, almost everybody and everything they're doing can look back and say, hey, I could have done this better, could have done it different.
Right. Yes, I do it a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, back to stuff I did 5 years ago and say, how... stupid to do something like that.
You know. Amen. Sometimes 5 minutes ago.
Right.
Jim, I appreciate your time. A couple quick questions. Do you want to see this before? It goes to a magazine called Sports Collector's Digest.
Uh-huh.
One of the results of this being printed, you will receive a pretty good increase in the number of autograph requests you get for a period of 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
In fact, one fellow said he normally gets about 6 a week, and you got over 100 in the first 3 weeks after his interview appeared. So you may get a bunch.
Yeah.
Some guys don't seem to care for that. Most of them don't think it's a problem at all.
Yeah, I don't care.
Good. Do you want to see it before I send it to the magazine?
No.
Okay, I don't want to misquote anybody. I hope I never do, but sometimes it happens.
No, I mean, you know, a misquote isn't going to bother me one way or the other anyway.
Well, I'd be hard-pressed to misquote you and say something undesirable for this. Would you like some copies of the magazine?
Once sure would, yeah.
How many would you like?
Oh, I don't know. 3 or 4.
Okay. Yeah, whatever you want, no problem.
No, that's fine.
Okay, great. I appreciate this very much. I've enjoyed it. I was a fan of yours. In fact, you were my age, but still today, I find baseball players I follow. I don't know if I call it a fan or not, but I follow certain players for one reason or another, and I still do it. I did it. I followed your career. Maybe I liked your name. I don't know what it was. I appreciate this. I will. It may be as much as 6 months before it's printed, but usually it's about 3 or 4 months. But
yeah,
we'll send you several copies.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, James.
Thanks. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.